This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
What's up, everybody? It's time for another edition of the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation and website home, placetobenation.com. You can find us all over the place. We're all over the map. We're up and down the coast. We are coast to coast and border to border, as our pal Mean Gene used to say. In fact, that's a guy we should have on the show. We got to think about that. All right, speaking of guests here on the Kevin Kelly Show, this episode our guest will be the one and the only Dangerous Danny Spivey. That's right, Dan Spivey. Who had quite a wrestling career and is embodied now in the persona of one of the most popular WWE stars. So if you don't know the story, we'll tell you all about it. We'll find out what led Spivey to the ring from the gridiron at the University of Georgia and in through an interesting career that took him all around the world. And now he's working with a whole generation of athletes, and his wife is a great friend of mine. We used to work together in WWE, so that'll be a very interesting conversation with our new pal Danny Spivey. That comes up later on in the show. But Justin is our producer, and we do welcome him in right now because, JR, there was some big news coming out of Night of Champions, and it wasn't necessarily good. It looks like the career of Sting could be over because of injuries suffered in a match with Seth Rollins. What do you think about that?
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hello. Good.
Yeah, it stinks. And it was a heck of a match. They really did a good job. I don't know if you got to watch any of it traveling, obviously, but to me, you could argue it was match of the night. He really worked hard. He adapted to Rollins' style. I thought Rollins did a really nice job carrying him. And many, including many on the reaction show here at PlaceMation.com, you know, they thought it was even better than the Cena match mm-hmm. that preceded it because it was unique. It was different. And you could see when he got hurt, and it was a little scary because he takes the turnbuckle powerbomb and he kind of like crumples a little bit and like tries to fight back to his feet. And then they actually wrestle for like another minute. And it was very reminiscent of SummerSlam 97 with Austin and Owen Hart.
Yeah.
And then like Rollins kind of just rolls. And Rollins did a hell of a job. He didn't panic. And, you know, he kind of led Sting through the finish. But news immediately after, Meltzer had it, everything else, that it was serious. And now, you know, word coming out that it may be career-altering for Sting. And, I mean, I don't know how many more matches he had anyway from an in-ring point of view. But at this point, if he does come back, he, you know, God bless him for going through with that kind of match with Rollins, but he's probably better suited for what we saw like at Mania. That was a lot of dog and pony show with the NWO and DX and all that versus trying to have like an indie, you know, indie-style match with Rollins.
Yeah.
And I don't think they did anything too crazy. I mean, he took the bump on the table where they didn't move the monitor, so that could have been pretty bad. But, I mean, I don't know. Look, I'm not in the ring. Is a turnbuckle powerbomb considered like a super dangerous move? I don't feel like he snapped him hard across the buckle. I mean, my point is I'm trying not to blame Rollins for this. I think it was just a stupid, fluky injury. But probably a guy that's 56 shouldn't be in there taking those kind of spots, I guess.
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, it's nice to have that character of Sting, but to put him in that spot is just – hindsight is always 20/20. But we do have the perspective of wisdom from sitting in the chair and being able to tell whether or not this is good or bad. If you saw Sting's matches in TNA, you would know that he was not suited at this point of his career for working like a quote-unquote main event style, whatever that is. And I think that if you are putting Sting in a main event position, you adapt to his abilities, be them what they may be. For 56 years old or whatever, it's okay. No one's going to care. And I think that, again, if it was me, I would be looking at who is – if I'm Vince McMahon, I would be looking at, okay, so who's responsible for putting this match together? How did this come to be? And how do we make sure that this doesn't happen anymore? How do we take steps to be smarter? We can't creatively make new stars. We struggle to get new people over. And yet when we have older established names, we don't do a good job with them either. So what's our job here? What do we do? Let's look back at everything. Reports are that Vince is not happy about the ratings. Okay, whatever. There is a great time to fix things. And it begins first with the executive looking at himself in the mirror or herself. What do I need to do to change? And then from there, what steps does my company need to take to change? We can't be afraid to change. And then from there, we carve out a new path, a different path, whatever that is. And that doesn't mean hit the reset button. That just means go back to doing what you do well, blocking and tackling. And from there, we'll see. But again, it's, you know, it's easy to go 16-0 in every NFL season if you never play anybody, right? And they haven't had competition for the longest time and still don't to this day. So who's going to beat them? Nobody. But boy, they're just not living up to their expectations of what they could be.
I think too, when you look at the ratings and the issues, and I think you kind of hit it without saying it with the Sting part of it. They don't have stars. I mean, they don't have like those guys that are larger than life. I mean, you look at the Attitude Era, you know, Austin, Rock, you know, Mankind, the Undertaker. Like those guys were larger than life. And you look back at the 80s, obviously, you know them all. I'm not going to have to name them all. Even, you know, even as recently as, I guess, like 7 years ago when Triple H was a little bit bigger and, you know, Cena and Orton weren't as played out and you still had Taker and Kane. And now you're kind of lacking those guys. And it's a weird dichotomy because I think more than ever, they're, I don't want to say accepted in the mainstream, but they've carved out a nice little corner of the mainstream for themselves. Like they get ESPN coverage now. John Cena's on talk shows. And, you know, like they're doing well in that regard. They just, besides Cena and, you know, Lesnar and I guess to an extent Undertaker, like, who are the names? Who are the guys that you're paying to see? You know, are you paying for the brand at this point? Are you paying for champions? Are you paying for star? Like, who are you paying to see?
Right. Is it the logo or is it what? I'm not quite sure.
And the matches are great. I mean, they have great matches every show, every week, every episode of everything. Your average SmackDown, which gets ignored by the majority of fans, still has like probably two matches better than like anything in 1999 in the ring. You know what I mean? And I'm talking like the B show during a down period has matches that you would rate much higher than like the like Raw in 99 when the ratings were through the roof. So like, what's the difference? The difference is you don't have stars to captivate your imagination.
And one of the things that, and we also had a terrific weekend with Ring of Honor, and I'll do some kind of recap on that. But just to sort of say, okay, well, what does Ring of Honor do? Because I know, because I, you know, that's where I work. We kind of let the stars grow organically, it feels. And sometimes the people that you see on the show may take a non-traditional path, as I do air quotes here in the palatial broadcast suite. It's, you can't over control, you can't micromanage everything. And Ring of Honor micromanages nothing. You know what I mean? And that may be where its genius lies, where its brilliance is, or it may be that we don't do enough control. I'm not sure. But I know that there's probably somewhere in between the hyperactive controls of the WWE and sort of the laissez-faire attitude that we have within Ring of Honor. And somewhere in that middle is probably where everybody should be, vacillating back and forth on an as-need basis when control is needed to when, hey, listen, let's let up the reins a little bit and let's stop strangling the creative. Let's let the guys grow organically to kind of where Ring of Honor is. Does that seem to make sense to you, JR? Does that seem to work?
Sure.
I mean, it's an easy fix. It's easy to say.
Yeah, I'd say the difference is they're in a weird spot because they're in a good spot corporate-wise.
Right.
So you don't want to start letting guys go out too, loosen the reins too much. But yes, they clearly need to loosen the reins quite a bit. And I feel like in the ring they kind of do. Because I don't think we'd be seeing Sting get turnbuckle powerbombed. You know what I mean? If it was like micromanaged in ring. So it really just comes down to like the promo work and maybe the direction of the stories. So I don't think they're overmanaging the ring work. Because again, the ring work has been, you know, maybe the best ever at time. And
right.
Close to like 2000 is probably the only time I could think of that has this consistent of good in-ring work in company history.
And we'll give you the, you know, and again, the flip side of that. Let's say, for example, that the guys were given a little bit more looser rein,
right?
With guidance, because there is so much talent, as much wrestling talent as there is in the ring, there is that much and more talent behind the scenes. Creatively, there's a wealth of people that can help, that can guide people in the right direction. But ultimately, you have to let the talent sort of fend for themselves and carve their own path. I doubt that there's a team of writers feeding Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey the things that they say that seem to captivate the sports world, the media world, and fans in general.
Right.
But those are two examples of people that are really over right now. I don't think there's anybody in WWE out of the new crop of athletes that has grabbed that audience's attention and been, you know, sort of on the tip of everyone's tongue since CM Punk.
And do they have anyone that can?
We don't know.
Is there anyone you think, if they let loose, would do it?
Well, I think if they let the chips fall where they may, Kevin Owens and Ryback, it looked like that was ready to break loose a couple of weeks ago. And when Randy Orton pulled Owens's Punk card back, a couple of weeks before that, and said, "Oh, looks like you're putting on a little bit of weight," Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor would have grabbed the microphone and owned the whole thing.
Right.
That would have been it. You didn't get a word in edgewise on him. He out-screamed everybody. So, okay, that's real. You have to be willing to fight back. You have to be willing to take. He's going to take everything if you let him. But this is what you say. This is what you do. Stand here and do this. And that's kind of what we get. And that's just one example. And that's only, and I could say that because I know it from working with him. I know the kind of dominant personality that he has. And we saw just a glimpse of that when he threw that piece of paper at Ryback. And Ryback looked like he wanted to get fired up at Kevin. And, man, that just had all the earmarks of something great. And Ryback kind of came across real, which I thought was good. But I don't think that moment was planned.
Right.
So that's more of what they need to do. Let the chips fall where they may, as somebody said.
So let me ask you this. How long before they can make that star and recapture? Like, when do they finally give up? Now, they may, you know, they're in a weird spot for Mania because some of the stuff seems to be falling through a little bit. So they've already changed course. We're not getting Taker, Brock Lesnar, or Mania anymore. That's coming at Hell in a Cell in October. And now it looks like Ronda Rousey will not be available for WrestleMania. I guess she had an interview today where she pretty much came out and said it. Plus, she's going to be filming that movie, and Dana White has said all along he's not letting her do it. So, you know, they still have a cachet of all the guys, but, you know, Steve Austin's probably not going to wrestle. Shawn Michaels probably not going to wrestle. Rock, who knows? I mean, are they going to do him in Triple H? Possibly. Where does that leave Brock Lesnar? Do you do him in Reigns again? Like, where do you head for Mania? I mean, at some point, they have to start balancing, building these newer guys up. And, you know, I've always likened Mania to the Super Show, right? So, you know what you're getting. It always bothers me when people get upset that there's a concert or that, you know, there's a celebrity. Like, that's what WrestleMania is. So going in, you shouldn't be mad when there's a 10-minute Flo Rida concert because you know that there's going to be that. So whatever. It's their one show a year, they go all out. But they have to get better. Have to get better at blending the old guys with the new and using them to put the new guys over. And they tried it at 30 and they got burnt with Daniel Bryan, right? So he fights Triple H, and then he goes over Batista and Orton. So, like, that was perfect. And then Orton, and then Bryan got hurt, and it burnt them. And, you know, you look back a few years, did they not pull the trigger with Punk when they had the chance? You know, when instead of running Cena Rock 2 in MetLife, should they have Punk run right through and fight Cena at Mania? you know, with the title, you know, his streak and everything on the line. Like he had earned that point, or him rock there, whatever you want to do. So,
mm-hmm.
like, they've gotten close, but every time they seem to just back off, and then you end up with the you know, current guys in the middle of the card, the retirees up top, you know how it is. And at some point, they have to, I don't know. And maybe they were trying last year with Reigns, and it backfired. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm rambling, and I don't know what to say about it.
Well, no, because we don't know the answer, and everything kind of is on the table, and everything should be on the table. Bold moves. I think that's what fans would like to see. Fans like it when bold things happen. Why shouldn't they consider the strangest of partnerships or the relationships? Why not? How is it going to affect their business negatively? You know, that's one of the things that people have said about Ring of Honor with NXT. Is it concerning you? I'm like, no, not at all. If NXT wants to, you know, cut in on Ring of Honor's action or do whatever, that's fine. They can do whatever they want. We're just going to keep doing our thing and not really worry about it. We had two pretty good crowds in San Antonio this past weekend, and it didn't seem to matter. Is NXT the answer for them? Is it? But see, even when they bring up the girls, for example, and we had, you know, there was a lot of hope with this Divas Revolution that it was going to be the new cool thing, and it wound up becoming a homogenized, watered down sort of situation to get the Bellas over. Yeah, well, whatever. It was what it was. And Charlotte still had her moment, and that was pretty cool. But it's not the game changer I think that it could have been.
And I mean, so, they have increased the match times and all that, right? So they are giving them more screen time. It's just not the women many people thought it would be. And maybe it will be now that the Bellas have lost. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem like it. They still were featured Monday, but we had the Paige heel turn. So maybe we move towards a Paige Charlotte feud, which would be kind of fresh.
This.
I know.
Anyway.
What do you want? That's all we got. I mean, you know, we're back to Kane Rollins. Kane is back in the main event, which, again, is fine. They spent a lot of time building it up over throughout the year, so it makes sense to pay it off.
Sure. And you get Kane back in the red and black, which is always cool.
Right. So, I mean, it's good. I mean, he's got to be done. He's got to be done soon. And, you know, you're pushing Brock Taker up, and you wonder, is it because they realized they didn't want it to be in Mania, or did they think now they want it to sell October? You know, I'm curious which one it is. But as one of the guys on the reaction show here pointed out, the show is in L.A., so you wonder if they beefed it up to try and get ESPN back in the show, you know?
Sure. How about, I mean, listen, UFC basically puts out a card every month.
Every week.
Well, a pay-per-view every month.
Yeah.
And it's built around one, maybe two marquee fights. Correct?
Yes, yep.
That's what they attempt to sell the pay-per-view with. It gets tons of coverage from ESPN or Fox, you know, Fox Sports or whatever. And it all seems to work for the UFC. So why not? For, again, you don't have to have 10 matches that are all ball buster blow-offs to the end of a 6-month long blood feud.
You do, though. And I'm not saying they should have to, but with the way fans are, like, look how critical everything is. I feel like if you don't have, you know, six great men, you know, you just, I don't know. I feel like they're at the point where they're trying to sell these network buys. I kind of think they do. I don't think, you know, this isn't 99 where the ratings were there for them to say, yeah, well, okay, we can have Godfather Midian open the show.
Sure, sure. And I'm not saying take and put a bunch of cold matches on in the undercard. What I'm saying is it's like, let's let some things percolate. Let's let some things be real and then see what happens. And now all of a sudden a Godfather Midian match, right? As a prime example, that could become interesting. Interesting because what so-and-so said, what so-and-so did, their reaction to this, this unplanned, seemingly unplanned thing that happened. And now people are talking about it. Now people are doing things. And trust me, there's ways to plan the unplanned. There's ways to make things look real. We don't know. We can assume that what happened with Sting was real. But there was a thought that crossed my mind. I was like, what a creative finish. what an interesting way to get out of this. And what an interesting way to have Sting go away now after he, quote unquote, loses and then come back at some point and seek revenge.
I'll tell you, the whole thing made me really sad that he didn't come in when WCW closed. Like, seeing him motivated, working hard with Rollins, like, he got himself the I just wish he didn't. And, you know, I know he was trying to help TNA get going and wanted to be their franchise player, and he had his issues with WWE, but just thinking of some of the matches that we didn't get with, like, still kind of just out of his prime Sting, working hard.
But how many,
Cena, him
listen,
and Taker.
Hey,
no,
man,
but come on.
Kansas City Chiefs fans are still going, oh, I wish we could have had Joe Montana that we had with the 49ers.
I know. But he's like,
get it.
He's like even like 3 years too late. All right. So even if he left TNA in like 2012 when they wanted to do the, or 11, whenever, remember they were teasing the, like Taker's return and everyone thought it was going to be Sting, the guy in the cabin or all that crap. I mean, that, even then, like, he still could have had a handful of really cool matches. But it's just, he just like one step too far this year when he came in. He just one foot closer to the grave.
Well, again, we'll discuss this, I'm sure, because this is not a new issue with WWE. I know that we'll talk a little bit later on about Ring of Honor, because we want to get Spivey on, because I'm excited to hear from him. We'll talk more about Ring of Honor, the great weekend we had in San Antonio with the national television taping on Saturday that was predicated, or happened, let's see. Well, we had TV on Saturday. We had the great pay-per-view on Friday night, which was a lot of fun. So I'll give you some thoughts on that, and we'll talk up some NFL as well as we head into week three. But we'll take a quick pause. We'll get Danny Spivey on the line, and we'll talk to him as the Kevin Kelly Show rolls on here on the Place to Be Nation and our website home, placetobenation.com.
Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Lives are going to be in Waylon Mercy's hands. You know what I mean? I don't think so.
All right, we're back here on the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation and our website home, placetobenation.com. Now, if you were a college football fan back in the day, Georgia Bulldogs, you probably remember Danny Spivey. If you were a wrestling fan, focused on all Japan from the late 80s to the mid 90s, you probably know Danny Spivey. But and even if you were a WWF fan in the mid 80s, you know Danny Spivey. But did you know that Danny Spivey is also very influential in the scene today for a variety of reasons? And that's why we've invited him here as our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. Danny, it's great to talk to you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you?
I am wonderful. We share several common bonds. Number one, of course, my announcing career and your wrestling career both started in Florida, and your wife, Ann Russo, is one of my dearest friends. We worked together in the WWE, and we loved her. She's awesome. How did you get so lucky as to meet Ann? Because I know it probably wasn't at the best period in your life, right?
No, it certainly wasn't. She really disliked me a lot. Because when I came back in 95, I came back to work for Vince as Waylon Mercy. And Ann called me one day and told me, she said, "Danny, you have to make an appearance." And I said, "No, I don't." And she said, "Oh, yes, you do." I said, "No, I don't. I'm not doing it." You know, and she says, "Well, you have to, or we'll fire you." I said, "I don't care. Fire me. If you fire me, I'm just going to work for my parents." You know, my parents had a construction company back in Tampa. And she says, "Well, you're going." I said, "No, I'm not." And so she just really hated me. And she went to JJ and told JJ that he needed to fire me. And he needed to make me do the appearance, and JJ just said, "Leave him alone and find somebody else." And so she didn't like me. But, you know, 20 years later or somewhere around that period, she was the one who was instrumental in saving my life. She was started the alcohol and drug program for the WWE, and she was very instrumental into seeing that I got help, and she put me in a rehab, and things changed. She started to like me. So, anyway, you know, I went from being the real bad guy to a guy she was willing to help. And, you know, I appreciated it, and I married her.
Well, I'm sure that it's probably the toughest job she's ever had is trying to keep you in line, right?
I don't know about that.
You know, hey, we've had a lot of cool guests here on the show, and we generally try to, you know, because I'm 48 years old, and I grew up watching championship wrestling from Florida, and I have been a professional wrestling announcer for the past like 24 years, and I worked for Vince from 96 to 2003, and right now I'm the announcer for Ring of Honor. So I know like a lot of contemporary guys, but I always find myself wanting to interview guys from my generation of when I first started. And that's why, like, we've had, you know, wanted to have you on, and we had Del Wilkes on, and we also had DDP on, and Brian Blair, and other guys like that from sort of that older generation. A lot of stories about how things would spiral out of control, and it was always that quest for control that was seemingly elusive. Is that Is that part of your story? Like, what brought you to the point to where Ann had to reach out and get you help?
You know, what I have is I had a disease. I was, you know, an alcoholic and drug addict. I think that, you know, I don't know whether, you know, if I wouldn't have got into wrestling, if I would have been an alcoholic or drug addict, I think it's a pretty good chance that I would have been. You know, injuries, I had a lot of injuries, and I've had 6 hip replacements, a knee replacement, and my neck's been fused. And, you know, I got hooked on painkillers, opiates, but, you know, that wasn't the only thing. I was addicted to cocaine. I was addicted to any kind of drug, anything that would get me high. I used, I was a junkie, you know. And, you know, it's, I was just very grateful that, you know, and WWE put me through treatment 4 times, 4 different times. They cared enough about me and saw that I got help. And, you know, luckily the 4th time was the charm. And, you know, I grasped onto that and turned my life around. At 56 years old, I had given up. I just quit. I didn't want to live anymore. And that's where this disease of alcoholism and drug addiction will take you. And, you know, and nowadays it affects everybody one way or another. You know, a loved one, a coworker. You know, it's just it's an epidemic. And you know, it's just a tough battle. You know, because you know, a lot of people are afraid to ask for help. But I got to the point where, you know, I was willing to do anything to turn my life around.
And I know that it's that one day at a time mentality, right? That has not changed, correct?
No, that hasn't changed. You know, you know, I'm in a 12-step program, and, you know, I believe in, you know, I have things that I have to do each day to make sure I stay sober, you know, and I make sure I do them because I don't want to ever go back to that place. You know, people think, well, you know, I've been sober for 20 years. I think that I can have a drink or I can smoke a joint or something like that. And it's a progressive disease. I mean, you know, I'll never be able to drink a beer or just smoke a joint or any of that stuff. So I have to stay, you know. You know, I can't do them ever, or, you know, I'll be right back where I started from.
And out of all the things that has happened with the WWE throughout all of the ups and downs of throughout time, I think that this rehabilitation services that they offer for anybody that was ever, you know, part of the company, I think is one of the greatest things that has ever been done. And gets very, very little publicity. They get very little credit for the good work that they are doing. Would you tell me what this program means to you? How would you summarize it for somebody that wasn't even aware that WWE offered these services?
You know, I don't know of another corporation in America or in the whole wide world that does that. You know, they took care of me. I hadn't worked for them for around 15, 16 years or something like that. And, you know, they took care of me. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you were in developmental, you never made it to the big show. I mean, they still take care of you. If you ever sign a contract with Vince, you know, they will make sure that you get the treatment that you need, you know. And I don't know anybody else that would do that, you know. It's just,
yeah, if you
amazing.
Work,
I mean,
right. You work for General Motors and you're there 10 years. And then 10 years later, You fall into addiction. You call up General Motors and say, "Hey man, listen, I need you guys to pay for rehab. You haven't worked here in 10 years, pal." And they will hang up on you.
Oh yeah, I don't know if there's another corporation in America. I'm sure there might be someone. If you were a current employee, they might help you, but I don't know of anybody who has a program, you know, like the WWE. I don't believe NFL does, or the NBA or Major League Baseball. I don't know if any of them do that. I don't believe they do. If they do, I haven't heard of it.
Right. It certainly is interesting. And I think, again, you mentioned something, too, about, like, guys that don't even get out of developmental. I know that a lot of – and we were talking earlier on in the show, Danny, about some of the things that – WWE could or could not do, you know, like with Sting getting injured last Sunday at the pay-per-view. And it's unfortunate, and things happen. We know that. We see it all the time. But gosh, it's, you know, it'd be so great if they could do something and control these type of things. And I'm like, well, there's so many great people that work backstage that work with the developmental system. And I know that you've spent some time there, and you helped kind of inspire what Bray Wyatt is today. How did that come to be? Was that indirectly through tape study of Waylon Mercy, or was that actually you kind of working side by side with him?
Well, as most people know, that me and Mike Rotundo were tag team partners, and Mike was very instrumental in my beginning. You know, I went to WWE and teamed up with Mike. I had only been in the business about a year and a half. It was a huge break for me to go in there and team up with someone who had been around for a while. And Mike was a really good guy, and he helped me out. Well, I met his son. I knew his kids growing up, and when they were growing up, and I met them down there at the developmental center when they was in Tampa. And his son Wyndham came to me and said, "Dan, I really love the character Waylon Mercy. You know, I'm thinking about doing that. Would you mind?" I said, "I would be honored if you would do it. And just let me know, you know, what you need from me to help you." You know, and he said, "Well, what would you?" I said, "First of all, I'd watch the movie, you know, 150 times, and you know, just get ideas off of that and use people, you know, that you've known in your past. You know, you'd be in, that you lived in the South. I'm sure you know some people that were goofy like that and had that kind of characteristics of being a Southern gentleman and just stabbing in the back when first chance they got, you know." And so, and the guy has done a great job with it. You know, he's I'm really proud of it.
It's almost like, and I think that's one of those great characters, because I know when I was in WWE, I worked on the magazine staff, and we talked many times about doing things with whatever happened to Waylon Mercy. Where did that character go? And we talked about it on the TV side, like, let's revisit some old characters and start to bring some of those stories back, whatever happened to. And Waylon Mercy became almost like an urban legend because he was there and then he was gone. Yeah. But one hell of an impact you made on everybody, because even all those years later, people still talk about it. Now it's the embodiment of Bray Wyatt. So you must have been doing something right.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing, everybody thought that I got hurt on a show where me and Diesel were having a match and powerbomb me. Everybody thought I had hurt my back. That wasn't the case. I just got mad and I quit. You know, that's simple as that. You know, it was just, they weren't doing anything with me at the time. And the biggest mistake I ever made in my wrestling career was the fact that, you know, we were in Montreal and we had a pay-per-view there. They didn't use me on the pay-per-view. And it was snowing. There was snow on the ground. And in Tampa, Florida, it was 85 degrees and sunny. And I walked out of the hotel in Montreal, and across the street was the airport. And I told Charles Wright, I said, "Charles, drive me to the airport. I'm going home." And I got on the plane and flew back to Florida. It was 85 and sunny, you know. And next day, Vince called me and, you know, just about begged me to come back to Jerry Briscoe. And I said, "No, I'm done." 2 weeks later, I had my knee replaced. And then 6 months after that, I had my first hip replacement. So I was in a lot of pain, but I could have gone on, and I wished I would have, you know, because I feel like, you know, I left a lot of unfinished business out there.
And now the life's work seems to be in a much more positive frame of mind for you and for others. How are you, you know, aside from managing your own care, how are you personally helping others, Danny, with what they might be dealing with, some of your brethren?
Gosh, the first three times that I went to rehab, you know, they give you tools to use, you know, and to how to insert it into everyday life. And when I would come back and, you know, you're supposed to go to a meeting, and I get home and I couldn't find the meeting. I just say, "Oh, screw it, I'm not doing it," you know. And then, you know, later on, I tried again. I go find a meeting, and, you know, you're supposed to talk to people and get phone numbers and stuff, and I just wouldn't do it. I wouldn't use the tools that were given to me in rehab and insert them into everyday life. Well, the last time I went to rehab, I thought of this idea of, you know, what if one of the boys, like myself, who's been through rehab, showed the other guys, you know, who've been through rehab, show them how to do these things and how to put this into everyday life, you know. And, you know, my deal was, you know, was the fact that I was a professional wrestler, you know, you people can't tell me what to do because you never walked in my shoes. If you did what I did for a living, you know, but they can't tell me that because I've done that and done much more than most of them. So
right.
I came up with this idea of being a sober companion for the guys when they get out of rehab. And so I've, the WWE has implored me several times to go home with guys and show them how to use those tools and show them how to get started with their program after they get out of rehab. And I don't only do that for the WWE. I do it for anybody who just calls me and needs help. And I help them, you know, show them what I did to get sober.
It's funny because,
and
you know,
I do to stay sober, too.
To stay, right, because the first three times, hey man, great! Congratulations, you've graduated from rehab. You're not cured. You got to go manage your care now on your own, and it's a big wide world out there with a lot of unanswered questions. And it seems like the simplest thing, but being one of the boys is so critically important too, because it comes so much better probably coming from you, because they can relate to you. You can relate to them.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty well known that I was a big drug user. And so, you know, the older guys, you know, and even stories, you know, from the older guys back to the younger guys, they know, you know, what kind of person I was, you know. I was a guy you didn't want to mess with in the locker room. And I was, you know, I'm a pretty straight up shooter. And, you know, that's kind of helped, you know, with dealing with people. So I really enjoy giving back to a business that I truly love. It's been good to me, and I'm just trying to help the guys, you know, because we've lost so many through drugs and alcohol over the last 20 years. I hear reports that it's been 50. Some reports are up to 70 people we have lost. You know, I know we average probably losing 2 or 3 people every year to drugs and alcohol. And it's a battle, and it's really, really tough to you know, get sober. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's not for sissies. It's a tough deal.
So a fan at home, I'm trying to think of who the most, Roddy Piper, for example, when he passed away, was in his early 60s, correct?
61, yes.
Yeah. Does the layperson at home say, my gosh, a wrestler died at 61. It must have been drugs. It must have been alcohol. I mean, the reports were that it was a blood clot. But
yeah.
should we think that it's related to drugs and alcohol? Meaning he doesn't have to die as a result of an overdose to it being a drug or a alcohol-related death. Is that a fair comparison to make?
Ronnie was you know, he had issues, but like all of us, you know, he ran hard back in the day. I mean, the 70s, 80s, the guys ran hard. They really did. I mean, a lot of drinking, a lot of partying. It was, that was the way it was. I mean, you had to be divorced 2 or 3 times and you had to drink a lot of beer and do a lot of partying, you know, to be a wrestler and be on the top, you know, and, you know, the guys really ran hard back then, and it's just amazing that there's not more probably dead, but I'm not saying that Roddy died, but, you know, all his stuff beforehand, it didn't help him any.
Right.
I know that.
Well, I know that what were some of the best times of your career? Did you enjoy your trips to Japan? I know that probably had to be grueling, but was that fun? You had to be just overwhelmed the first time you stepped into Madison Square Garden when you were only a couple of years into your career. I mean, take me through some of those experiences. What were some of the real personal highlights that you look back on today and remember fondly?
Well, you know, it was really hard in the beginning. Me and Scott Hall starting the business together. Dusty was the one that found us and put us together, and we really paid our dues, you know, the first 6 to 7 months. I got really fortunate. I got to go to the WWE early in my career, and that was a very, you know, that was a big high spot for me. You know, my gosh, I hadn't even been in the business a year and a half, and I'm already going up there and working with Mike Rotundo and a pretty good tag team. And that was a big deal. And when I got fired and let go, I had become friends with Terry Funk. And I was young, and I hadn't paid my taxes. I owed the IRS about $20,000. I had ruptured a disc in my neck. I had a neck fusion, and I was pretty down, you know. And Terry Funk had called me, and he said, you know, Dan, would you be interested in going to Japan? I said, oh, hell yeah, you know. And Terry booked me over in Japan, and Japan was just, they did my style. It was, as long as you didn't bring blood on somebody, you didn't break any bones, it was good. And the stiffer, the better. And that just fit me to the T. And they really liked my work over there. There wasn't any politics, you know. They graded you on and treated you the way you worked in the ring. There was no dogs, and there was no birds, and there was no lady managers, and there was not a lot of bullshit. It was just, you know, get in there and just work your ass off. I went to 4 straight tours over there. I went, you know, I work a month, go home for a couple of weeks, and go back. That was the big turning point in my career. And then later on, I got to be tag team partner to Stan Hansen, who is a legend in Japan. I had the opportunity to work with two of the best workers in the business ever, tough guys, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy. Some of the Japanese guys, what great workers they are. I mean, Jumbo Teruda and Tenryu and Kobashi and Misawa and Kawada. I mean, those guys could really work. And it was a pleasure to work over there. I wished I had my career to do over again. I don't think I'd ever come back to the States. Working for Giant Baba was a pleasure. And the matches that we had with Doc and Terry, I mean, they're classic. If you ever get a chance, watch some of those matches. They're awesome. And I'm just proud to have been involved in those matches with those guys. I miss them dearly. They were good friends.
I know we talked to Del Wilkes a few weeks ago, and he points to that time, his time in All Japan, as his personal career favorite, because of the quality of the athlete that he stood across the ring with. And you mentioned just some of the great names that were there. The talent that Baba was able to assemble was second to none. And his passing certainly led to a lot of turmoil in the company. Now, was that around the same time that you stayed more in the States, or were you there during the time when Mrs. Baba took over?
No, I was never involved when Mrs. Baba was in charge. The last time I went to Japan was in 95.
Okay, and that was much later on. And then, of course, you know, you had opportunities throughout the years, you know, for fans of WWF that remembered the tag team with Mike Rotunda, and then tag team in the Skyscrapers and WCW with a very young Undertaker, and all the experiences kind of leading towards, you know, where you are today in your life. But it sounds like that for everything that you did, Danny, there's no, like, regret. There's just, this is the way it was. I make no excuses, and here we are.
No, the only regret I have is, I wish I would have gotten an opportunity earlier in my career to do Way of Mercy. I wish I would have finished, you know, the unfinished business that I had with Way of Mercy. It was a character that I really enjoyed doing. It was the first time that I got to be somebody other than Dan Spivey or Dangerous Dan Spivey. You know, it was a character that me and Vince created. You know, I was just lives are going to be in White of Mercy's hands. You know what I mean? I mean, all that stuff was just stuff that I just came off the top of my head. You know, they took me out to this picnic area and said, okay, Dan, you know, we're going to do a vignette here, and you have a minute, or, you know, and the red light come on. Okay. You know, I just, there was just no riders or nothing. It was just winging it, you know, and that's what made those things just special. You know, it was a special character.
Well, and we see how that character has grown and evolved, and how you help breathe life into Bray Wyatt. And so he's going to have a good long career because of you, because of that character. And you will continue to do good work with those that you give the opportunity to help as they come out and they begin to make their first steps, their journey as it continues post-rehab, whether they're involved in the WWE or from other walks of life. Now, I'm one of the first people we mentioned, of course, was your beautiful wife, Anne, who's a great friend of mine. She's very instrumental in your work and what you're doing as well. But she's been busy, I understand, writing a book. And we definitely want to give this some attention, and we'll put it up on the website as well, so people can order it. And it's actually a children's book, if I understand. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a children's book that she was putting together for her own kids. And she handed it to me when she was thing. I said, I think this is great. You need to get it published. And luckily enough, Kate Publishing agreed to publish her book. It's called I Believe in Me. It's inspiration and quotes for kids. It's a book that she put together thinking of her own kids, but thought that maybe, you know, kids who are going to a different school, going through divorces, or just having problems, it's a book that they can go back and write in, and they can take pictures and put it in the book. It's just something to really help kids get through tough times. I'm very proud of her. She's done a great job with it.
That's fantastic. Now, if somebody wanted to get this book today, could they go to Amazon? Would they go to a bookstore? Would they go to a website? How can they get a copy of this book?
As far as I know now, I don't believe the book's in bookstores. Is the book in bookstores? Not yet. Okay. Everything's in the process of getting to the bookstore. We're going to be selling it on my Facebook page. We're going to be advertising, you know, a special deal. If you buy it off the Facebook page, you can get an autograph of Waylon Mercy, too. So we're going to be doing that. It's not in bookstores yet, but it's in the process.
Well, we'll certainly carry that torch for you guys and help get this word out there, because I know from dealing with, you know, again, I've got two boys, 20 and 8 years old, and have seen so many of their friends that have come over to the house, and they're always seemingly dealing with something, or they know somebody that's dealing with something. This book might really help them out, and certainly give them some pause to realize they're not alone in their struggles.
Oh yeah, very much so. That's the whole thing of, you know, helping kids, you know, get through tough times. It's I'm very proud of her. She's done a great job with this book.
Well, listen, I'm glad that she didn't get you fired, but I'm also glad that she, you know, helped keep you in line, because I'm sure it's not easy. But the two of you make a, you know, for somebody that had a great tag team career, I think you and Ann make one hell of a team. And I think it's fantastic that the two good people wind up together and help do good work for others. That's really fantastic. Dan, I'm really proud of you.
Oh, thank you. We're a very good tag team, that's for sure. I also have a company where I work as a sober companion. I work with people who have drug and alcohol problems, like we've been talking about. And my website is being repaired right now, but you can locate it at soberchoice.com is the website.
So soberchoice.com is the website, and it's in the process of getting revitalized, and when that's up, that'll be some good information. If somebody knows somebody, or if they're dealing with somebody, you know, or if it's themselves or whatever, when you're making those first steps, Dan can certainly help you out, and that's great.
The number to Sober Choice is 813-713-9216. It's 813-713-9216.
Okay. That is great. We'll make sure that we put this out for everybody to see. You'll see that on the show's social media sites as well. And if people wanted to get in contact with you via Facebook, is it Dan Spivey? How do we find you on Facebook?
Yeah, Dan Spivey on Facebook. That's real simple.
Pretty easy, man. Well, listen, you're no frills guy. That was your whole career. No nonsense, no bullshit, and that's what we like about you. And we want to have you back, and we'll get some more updates on the things that you're doing outside of the ring and how you're helping others, and thoughts on other subjects. We've just barely begun to scratch the surface of your whole career, Dan.
Oh, that's true, and Dan's in the process of writing my life story too.
Well, that, that's going to be interesting. Now, how long until that's finished? I'm anxious to read that.
We're hoping. 2000 and probably the end of 2016.
You know, next time I may just want to interview her. You know, she's the author. She's the famous one in the family, right, Dan?
Exactly. I think that's a good idea.
Well, I would do anything in the world for Anne. She's one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my whole life, and would do anything to help her and to you. So, absolutely, we'll have her on, and we'll talk, and we'll have some fun. Absolutely.
Sounds good. She talks very highly of you, too.
That's fantastic. You know, we'll tell Dan, she can tell all the Dan Spivey secrets. You know, that'll be the whole thing. Like, does he clean up? Does he pick up his socks? Does he leave dirty dishes in the sink?
No, we don't need to discuss that at all.
The real important stuff. All right. Hey, Dan Spivey, I want to thank you so much for joining us, man. It was great. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Joseph. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You won't freeze in the wrong position, ignoring every plea to remain for.
That's right, we got our own house band, Brother Kite. I want to thank them once again. And Brother Kite on iTunes. Get all the music that you hear on the show and others. Brother Kite and our pals. How else can they get the music of our house band?
They can do it at their website at thebrotherkite.bandcamp.com.
Brother Kite, that's right. I should have had them with me in San Antonio. I needed my own, you know, orchestral, accompaniment. I got to do it. Well, we got to do autographs on Friday. That was a lot of fun. And I had a hell of a pay-per-view on Friday night. Is the Friday night pay-per-view, as somebody who is a loyal wrestling pay-per-view watcher, is that a tough night for you to be able to tune in to something like Ring of Honor?
No. So it started at 9, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm in your I guess I'm in your demographic, but I mean, I have kids, young kids. So it's like, it's easy for me to say I'll be home on a Friday night if I want to be. You know, it's not like we'd have a booming social life in that department. So we'll, there'll be times we go out on Friday night, but generally I'd be home. If not at 9, close enough to like order a DVR it. You know what I mean?
Got it.
So, yes, it works for me. It's actually probably even better than a Sunday during football season.
That's the one thing I worry about with this Friday night thing is, and I don't know any of the numbers, so I have no idea whether it does good, bad, whatever. And I wouldn't know what good or bad was. But does Friday night work for people? So the bookend matches with Jay Lethal was certainly very interesting. He is a remarkable athlete. There is, and I'm a homer, I'll admit it, but damn, he's good. And just continues to amaze me.
Do you
think, and if
you don't want to, go ahead, finish your point.
No, but I was just going to finish telling everybody how great Jay Lethal is, which you should know already. So what was the question?
If, you know, and if you don't want to get into this aspect of Ring of Honor, that's fine, but do you feel he should have lost one of the titles? In the booking, because one of the, and I'm not going to say prevalent, but I've seen it more than one place, and I've heard it from people here, Placement Nation, I've seen it elsewhere, that one thing with the pay-per-views, and now you're charging more, and I'm not saying it's not worth it, but you're charging more than Dirty E's charging, right? So that's how it's going to get compared. So, Night of Champions, $10, you know, All-Star Extravaganza, $35-45,
right?
Depending where you're at, HD, SD, all that stuff, STD, DIM again. So, if you're, you know, comparing those things, and your pay-per-views have had a tendency recently to not always have the, you know, happiest of go-home ending. So, like, What is your thought around that part? And should they have done similar to what WWE did, where they had Rollins lose to Cena before beating Sting? Do you think Lethal should have lost that title, add some curiosity to the main event, and not necessarily go out again on kind of with the heel standing tall?
It's been the last, well, two of the last, okay, let's see. The last four pay-per-views, Briscoe up over Adam Cole, final battle. Briscoe up in that the 13th anniversary, and then Lethal beats Briscoe and Lethal beats O'Reilly. So 2-2.
Okay. Who did Briscoe beat at the second one, not the Cole one?
In the 13th anniversary, he it was Hansen, Ciampa, and who was the fourth? It was that and Elgin.
Okay.
It was the four corner match. When I was in the WWE, and this is answering your question. Bad guy wins main event of pay-per-view. Fans say pay-per-view sucks. And this was the AOL poll. So it was very scientific.
Well, let me qualify. No one has said, I've not seen anyone say that pay-per-view sucked. I'll say that.
Well, this is, I'm making a point. So anyway, pay-per-view sucked. Good guy wins main event. Pay-per-view is awesome. Okay. And even if the pay-per-view wasn't that great, it would still get a bigger thumbs up than thumbs down vote if good guy wins main event of pay-per-view. Now, here's the way the audience is today. And tell me if you think I'm wrong. Good guy wins pay-per-view. Pay-per-view is good. Worth money. Bad guy wins pay-per-view. People go, I don't know if it's worth the money. Because they're comparing it to, because at the time, all pay-per-view costs the same. WCW, WWF, ECW even. All virtually the same cost. Now people go, is it worth the money that we're spending?
Because we get
the cheaper alternative. Well, right. It's just, you know, it's WrestleMania. Therefore, we should get a happy conclusion.
But see, I don't think it's necessarily face heel per se. I mean, that's feedback I heard recently. But it's not face heel per se. I think it's more the guy, your personal face or heel, right? So I don't think it's the face or heel necessarily. Maybe for some people it is. But, I mean, Brock Lesnar was a heel for a lot of his run last year, and many people thought he should win, like, every match he's in, you know?
Yeah, so, right.
But he's your personal face. He may not be the face on the show, but he's the guy you like. So I think it comes down to more about storyline conclusion. Like, if you don't – and this is a fear many people had, and I think it's come true a little bit with WWE taking their product down to $10 a month. Is it going to affect how they book these shows where they don't care as much necessarily if they give you a screw finish in the main event?
Is that what you think? Do you really think that that's what they say?
WWE, I think there's a mindset, unless they thought that way before, if that's what you're getting at. But I think there's a mindset that we want these shows to be really good, but we're going to tolerate a little bit more of, you know, maybe not delivering as clean a finish because we're not asking people to pay like $60 anymore. Like when I was paying, if I paid for this show, Night of Champions, I mean, that's a bad one. Battleground, that had a screwier finish, right? So Battleground, if I had paid like $60 and that was the finish I got, I'd be like, ugh. You know what I mean? Like just, okay, that's like a Raw TV thing. But it's hard to say that now. Like I see people still say like this is a Raw show. Well, you know, you can say you're paying $10, but you're getting the whole archive and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, when you really boil it down, you're probably paying less than $10 for the worth of the pay-per-view. So, to me, it's a little more tolerable if you don't get that clean finish because it's more of the – it's a slightly minuscule level more expensive version of the TV show, and it's more of a continuation, whereas pay-per-views in the past were meant to be more of a in many ways, a blow-off or a conclusion of the story. And that changed a bit when they went to monthly pay-per-views. But once they were presented all on the same, you know, track as far as like cost and name brand, yeah, I think you do expect a little bit more of a finish at the end.
Well, I think we got a shocking ending on the end of this pay-per-view with Adam Cole's turn on Kyle O'Reilly. So it's action on the pay-per-view and then reaction on the TV show. And we'll see in a few weeks' time the first glimpses of the reunited kingdom now. it's interesting. It's an interesting point that you make, and one that I certainly see validity in. I think that throughout the course of the night, we more than gave people their money's worth, in my opinion, because of the action that they saw and the level of stars that they saw. Friday's show was not a happy ending, nor was it a happy beginning, nor were there happy chapters in the middle. This was a heels night, and maybe that is part of the reason why there's some perception of that show being what it was. The only feel-good moment of the night was Moose surviving the no disqualification match. And other than that, there wasn't a lot of smiles on people's faces. It's just the kind of the way it goes, you know?
I just think they have to be cognizant that, you know, you're now the most expensive product out there outside of WrestleMania, which I guess is included in the network too. So, I mean, you're really the, yes, Dan. Okay. Spoilers. We'll mark that down. this is, you know, Ring of Honor is now the most expensive product you could order. So I just think that needs to be, and I'm sure it is just in the, you know, in the front of your minds or in front of the company's mind when they're putting these shows out, to make sure that if you want to stay successful with the pay-per-view model that you're now alone in the world of wrestling in many ways, that it's worth it. That's all. Like in the past, Ring of Honor, the iPay-per-view, the, you know, and WWE was the super expensive one. Like, oh, I'm paying, why would I pay six? And that was what you heard, right? Why would I pay $55 for, you know, for, you know, bragging rights when I can get ROH's iPay-per-view for $20, or I can watch ROH TV, or I can watch, you know, Impact, whatever was better at the time. That was the complaint. So just feedback from me as a fan to say, you know, whether Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, if I'm going to part with $55 or $45 for the HD feed, you know, I want to make sure that I know what I'm going to get is worth that, because I can not pay that and watch tons of wrestling elsewhere.
Yeah.
You flip-flopped.
You meaning the economics of it is flip-flopping.
Yes, you flip-flop,
so therefore,
with WWE. You become them. And they become you. You become George, and George has become Elaine.
It's like Bizarro World.
Yes.
And look at you, even Steven.
Yes. By the way, that's the episode that was just posted at PlaceMination.com, our Seinfeld rewatch.
There you go. Hey, and McGinn, you know, made a sort of a reference to the fact that, you know, what fans commonly complain about, you know, when we or anyone else does sort of a reaction show to a recently aired pay-per-view or television show. Oh, the show is full of spoilers, you know. I think the show is available live. And if you don't see it live, then don't bitch if you
well, I can see like within like a couple hours now with DVR and stuff. But I mean, if you haven't watched it by now, I think it's on you. I mean, you're the voice of Ring of Honor. We're clearly going to talk about it, probably.
I make sure that I give out
spoilers.
Don't
let Eeyore McGinn get in your, you know.
No. And I think he was being ironic. I think he was being
Alanis Morissette.
Yes, because he was writing what on our screen here, what I've seen written 1,000 times, but he tagged it with an LOL, yes, which meant laugh out loud. And so anyway, but I think that because I do the post game recap. We're right there at ringside as soon as the show is over. Hi, fans. Kevin Kelly, post-game recap. My goodness. Here's what you missed. And I tell people, and I don't care. Because if you didn't see it live, then tough. I think that Ring of Honor just needs to do what it needs to do. And if the economics of the situation are driven, I don't think by the quality of the show, but I think by just the pure price, then Ring of Honor will have to adjust. Now, if WWE can't stay at their $10 model and they have to adjust north and increase price, okay, then so be it. I think let the free market determine what it is. But I think creatively, I think you let the chips fall where they may, and people are going to buy it or they're not going to buy it. It's not like we did not give a finish to the match.
Look, I'm not criticizing the show at all. I'm just telling you something to consider.
Right.
I didn't say that it wasn't worth it.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, I'm trying to think of, like, what would be, okay, well, what in my opinion would be bad? Well, I can understand. Okay, so if are people saying that because there was interference in the main event, that
I implore you to listen to the PTBN reaction show.
Oh, no, really?
No, they weren't. Listen, I'm just telling you, for your it's the priciest pay-per-view.
Right.
Okay. Your double champion is wrestling in two great matches.
Right.
I could see where someone may think this is a good spot for a title change. That's
but
what I'm saying.
But he didn't lose.
I know. I'm just telling you. I can't
well,
have
he would
have.
I think the story is he would have lost the second one were it not for Adam Cole doing what he did, which wasn't to the benefit. It was the unintended benefit. Jay Lethal was the unintended recipient of Adam Cole's jealousy, of Adam Cole's hatred. That's the reason why there wasn't a new world champion crowned. Right? It's kind of the way I see it. That was a story I told. But so people want, okay, so people want title changes if the show is more expensive. Interesting.
I didn't say they want all title changes. When you look at the program, you've
you
laid
got
out.
A new world. You got new world tag team champions.
All right, look, just telling you what I'm hearing,
and I'm pushing back.
You can push back. Don't get mad at me.
Let's light people on fire. That's what we need to do. Light people on fire.
Let's light Andrew Luck on fire. What's going on there?
It's. I think this is the them getting lucky. Right. No pun intended. And Peyton Manning having the neck problems when he did. 2-14
Mm-hmm.
They get the number one pick and they stumble upon Andrew Luck. They could not possibly screw that pick up.
Correct.
How many picks have they gotten right after that?
None.
Over the last
T.Y. Hilton. When did
years?
They draft him at some point?
Yeah. T.Y. Hilton. Good.
I don't think he was a high pick, though. Right.
No, I think he was lower. So that's good. Let's say probably third round. Maybe lower, but I think.
I don't give credit.
No higher
than
second.
That's like the grunt scouts. I mean, I'm talking. They're not hitting on the big picks, which is what you need for impact players. And the problem is they have Andrew Luck. They're not putting it there around him. Their offensive line is a sieve. They haven't put much defense in place around the team either. And that seems to now be creating issues between Chuck Pagano and the GM.
They lost when they lost Freeney and Bob Sanders.
In fairness, I don't think Bob Sanders ever actually played. He was hurt like 9 games a year.
I know, but when he played, he was great.
Yeah.
And Mathis on the other side, right?
Yeah.
They were the bookend DNs. The chickens come home to roost, as they say. And I think there is definite frustration.
If they were in a tougher division, they'd be screwed.
I think they're in trouble anyway. In picking the winners and losers for this week, as we are wont to do, I had a hard time picking Indy to win, but I felt like I had to. I just don't see them going 0-3, but they could.
Not at Tennessee. I don't see Tennessee winning that game.
That was the reason why. Right. It was like if it was at Tennessee.
It is.
Oof. Oh, it's at Tennessee?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go back and change that then.
But
I don't see the Colts going 0-3. Do you see the Jets going 3-0?
Yes. I think Philly, it depends how Philly adapts. Do they change their game plan more? Now, if DeMarco Murray may be out, he left practice today, but is that better for them? I mean, does Sproles create more matchup problems? I don't know. The Jets are playing with a lot of confidence, especially coming off Monday night. I think Bowles is a really good defensive game planner. And, you know, we talked about it here before. I was always a defender of Rex Ryan as a coach, but I will say it's been really nice. Just the quietness around the team, the demeanor. The lack of penalties. You look at like Buffalo just playing like animals on Sunday and all the penalties they racked up, and it cost them in many ways. And, you know, I picked the Patriots to win that game. I was not buying the hype. And it's because I saw it. I saw that show for 4 or 5 years, whatever it was.
Yep.
I watched it. That was a Rex Ryan losing this game written all over it. Gets everyone all hyped up and fired up. And they come out playing like nuts, and they make a bunch of stupid mistakes. They get their shit together late, but come up just short. And there he is at the podium, shrugging his shoulders. Gee, I don't know what happened. You know, we played our ass. They're the best. That's why they're the best. You know, and they're like the same stuff. And, you know, I read the report today about how the post game in the Jets locker room, like not once did Bowles, you know, make it about him. Right? He gave out the game balls, talked about the team and how they have more work to, you know. And you just remember back to the Rex one. You know, it's always, and that's a big part of his coaching game. I get it, right? A big part of his game is motivating the players to play for him, and that's a big part of what he is. But the part that doesn't come along with it is that accountability that other coaches do put into place. He's so desperate to get them to buy in and play hard for him that he kind of excuses the little things that they don't pay attention to. And, you know, maybe if you had a quarterback to mask it, it'd be a lot different.
Yep.
But I look at what the Jets have done with a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he's a big upgrade in many ways over what they've had, just because he'll make the basic, most basic of quarterback plays that they didn't have for the last 5 years, where, you know, throw the ball away.
By the way,
the
good
sack.
Good looking out, Dan McGinn, T.Y. Hilton, third round, 92nd pick overall.
Okay. So I give that to the scouting department, not to like the, I don't know. You know, that's the guys really out in the field pushing the GM to take a guy more than, like, you know, their GM out there, if that makes sense. I'm talking about hit the big picks. Those are the impact ones. That's what I want to see. The later rounds, you're going to hit because you put a lot of work and your scouting department is out there busting their ass at the you know, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, if you can't miss. And in their defense, they're drafting at the end of the first round, so it's a little bit harder. I mean, even like teams like the Patriots have you know, whiffed for many years before they got their shit together and started drafting better at that point. But anyway, I'm on my tangent about Rex Ryan. But I like, to answer your question, you know, if this was a Rex-led team, I think this is a game where they let down and piss away. What I've seen so far from the way Bulls coaches, I like it. I think there's a good chance they win this game, only because I don't see how Sam Bradford survives. I mean, they have their offensive line, it is a disaster. And they should have had like 11 sacks on Andrew Luck Monday night. He was just quick enough to elude them and good enough. I don't think Bradford can do that.
Good. Listen, having Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie make a secondary great and make a head coach look fantastic. So
and a great D line. I mean, they have
a
three D line and you know, a Hall of Fame cornerback. So it's
sure.
You know, it's yes.
And then of course, you know, the team that they share the stadium with is a horror show. They've been in position to win their first two games.
How sick are you?
It's the Eli face. I'm a Giants fan, right?
Yeah.
But I am not an Eli defender. He's the luckiest quarterback ever. Not once, but twice. David Tyree and Mario Manningham, are you kidding me? He had no business winning either Super Bowl. He won two. Somehow this gives him, or gives the idea in people's minds that he and that Eli Manning is great. He's not. He's exceedingly average. Give me Ben Roethlisberger. Give me Philip Rivers. Give me anybody in that era, that draft era. Drew Brees.
Not anymore, Drew Brees.
Well, Drew Brees' career, to me, he's a better quarterback than Eli Manning. And Eli Manning has two rings, and Drew Brees has one.
You think Brees has that career in New York in the weather and everything? I feel like he really benefited from the dome and having those guys fast out there on the track. Anyway, sidebar.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I don't think that Eli Manning is a great quarterback in any weather condition. I don't care. Coughlin's face, just I'm tired of the old confused guy face, the old pissed off Irishman face. Just stop already. I've had it. I need a change. And I don't care if the Mara family doesn't change coaches. I don't care. He's got to go. He cut Preston Parker this week. Fine. That's good.
He was awful.
He's rotten. Why did he make the club? Why didn't they keep James Jones? You mean to tell me that Preston Parker was better than James Jones? That's ridiculous. I picked up James Jones on my fantasy team before week one. He's got three touchdowns in two games.
Hooray for me.
Then
he have three and then one?
I thought it was either 2-1 or 3-1. I know last week he had one catch, 29 yards, one touchdown.
I think he had three the week before.
Okay. So he had 3-1. Fantastic. Hooray. You mean to tell me he's better? He's not better than Preston Parker, who you keep? Why? Because he can also play special teams? Give me a break. The job of the receiver is to catch the ball. The Ravens suck.
To the Giants just real quick, because beyond all that, you had two winnable games. And now you look at that division, Romo and Dez gone, right? So the Cowboys are 2-0. How's that going to hold up? Eagles are a mess. Washington, I mean, is this suddenly their division? I don't know.
They run very well. Right. They're all of a sudden the, you know, they can run like crazy.
But we'll see if they're any good, if Cousins can hold up. I mean, the Giants, if they won the two games they had 10-point leads in the fourth, could have really been, I mean, in the driver's seat. And now,
but they did not deserve to win the Dallas game.
Yeah, but that's the game you got to win. That is the game you have to win. When you get that gift, you have to win it.
Right.
And they didn't.
They were given a gift because it should have been, geez, what, 23-6 in the first half? And they found a way to stumble, bumble around. I think they only had like a 14-6 lead, whatever it was. They had opportunities in the first half to really put the Giants in a vice and didn't do it. And then the Giants wound up getting some play, making some plays second half, take the lead, and screwed it up. Sunday, different story, questionable game plan on Julio Jones. He ran wild, and all of a sudden a 10-point lead evaporates, and it's, you know, now 0-2 for the G-men. And I'm a fan. They're my team.
Could have been 2-0 and the lock, or not the lock, but the, you know, the clear kind of team at the front of the pack.
And everybody would be saying, you know, the reactionary press, everybody would be saying this week, oh my gosh, the Giants, it's the Giants and the Packers in the NFC.
And now you're looking at Dallas sitting at 2-0 with two division wins already as well.
Right. And you're not worried if you're a Cowboys fan about the next 10 weeks not having Tony Romo.
Oh, of course they're worried. I mean, they're probably very much in trouble. I mean, if they sell like Murray like last year and they could rely on just pounding him, but I don't know if Randall can do that. They're going to stack the box, and whether it's Kellen Moore or, you know, Brandon Weeden or Matt Cassel, they're going to dare them to throw, and that's it. And we'll see if they can get it done. But I'll say this: they're in much better shape that they're 2-0 with you know, two game pad in the division like that. That gives them a little bit.
You said stack the box. That's fine. Okay, so we talked about Ring of Honor. We talked about the NFL. We did want to give a little bit more attention. Oh, I do want to give special thanks to Taz for having me on his new show last Wednesday morning. And that was very exciting. So check out Taz. If you're not already a listener, make sure you do that. And also our pal Jim Ross, who's doing some good stuff out there with his podcast as well. And we got to get Cornette on the show. I got to get a hold of him.
That's you.
So,
not me, buddy.
That's all me. I
got
to get
Cornette. I got a Spivey, you know?
You did great. He was a great guest.
Actually, we should give a shout out. Our fan, Michael Vincent, helped get Spivey. So he reached out to him on our behalf. So thank you.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And I got to get Steve Willey as a critic for a reviewer for ROH DVDs, right?
Yes, that's on you.
He resent me his email. I did a bad job. He sent it to me, and I totally forgot about it. But this way we could start to get some ROH reviews on the site. What happened to the TV reviewer? He was going great guns and then fell apart.
Yeah, it's tough to keep up those weekly recaps. You know, it's tough.
Maybe he could put a little less effort into it.
It's no, because you want to do it, you got to do it right.
Oh,
we got a guy doing Raw right now, and I don't know how he does it. I mean, I don't know. I'd blow my brains out. I don't know how he gets through it every week and recaps it.
And the rest of Night of Champions, okay, largely forgettable, right?
Yeah, it was a fun watch. I'll put it that way. Owens Ryback, I liked a lot, actually, the opener. I thought they really worked a good match around Ryback's shoulder. And Owens stealing the title at the end, I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
Dolph and Rusev, kind of more of the same.
What'd I tell you? By the way, was I right?
Yes.
Thank you. I said weeks ago that it wouldn't work with separating Lana from Rusev, and now the plan is apparently to put them back together.
Well, no, I think everyone said it was wrong. You said that Vince was going to break them up in real life. And there actually are rumors out there that's happening, but we'll see.
What? You mean really? I can't believe it.
It's rumors. I don't believe the rumors. Dudley Boyz, who I've actually enjoyed the little return here.
Oh, yeah.
New Day, that was fine. The women's match was very good. Charlotte and Nikki. Nikki controlled a lot of the match, and I thought she did a really nice job. One of the better women's matches of the year, obviously. WWE, I'm talking about, not NXT, because there's like 10 there better. But and then the six man was fine. Jericho is kind of, you know, he's like this era Jimmy Snuka level mystery partner. You know what I mean? Like, like you get all excited for the mystery partner, and the Snuka would be trotted out, and now it's like Jericho's kind of in that role. So. And it's fine. He works hard and he enjoys it. But
by the way, his favorite wrestler, Cheeseburger.
Yes, I saw that.
Isn't that amazing?
Who doesn't love cheeseburger? And then Cena Rollins, fine, and but they did it again on Raw the next night. Like, we need a break from that. And I really liked Rollins Sting. Was my match of the night. I really enjoyed it. And
yeah.
It was nice to see Sting kind of get that moment, even if he almost died because of it.
Two buckle bombs is what we needed. That was it? One wasn't enough. We had to have two.
Yes. I the scarier spot was when he almost smashed his head and neck on the monitor. That was a scariest spot.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy. Okay. All right, so what's going on now with the when are we adjusting our schedules for real life? When is that happening?
Are we good
in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think we're back in 2 weeks. Let's see. That is the October 5th. Yeah, we'll be here the 5th. After that, it gets a little dicey for a couple of turns.
Yeah, we just may have because of work and stuff. We may have some adjusting to do. Maybe we could get some stuff, as they say, in the can.
Mm.
That might not be the worst idea.
Okay.
We'll see what we can do. Otherwise, you know, maybe just make it the McGinn show for a couple of weeks. Listen, ESPN, you listen to ESPN radio and the regular hosts are hardly ever there.
Yeah. Do you listen?
Yeah, I do all the time, actually.
Even when the fill-in's on?
Yes. It depends on the fill-in.
Okay.
I will say that.
Did you see Curb Your Enthusiasm maybe coming back?
I did not. I was not a Curb fan.
Oh, God. All right, let's just go. Now I'm not going to listen to your show either.
Because I didn't have HBO.
Well, you got to watch them now. They're all on HBO Go.
Is that extra?
Do you have HBO?
No.
You can get it.
It costs money?
We'll talk.
Okay. All right. So, hey, we want to thank Dan Spivey and his lovely wife, Ann, for their, you know, inclusion tonight on the show. It was great talking to Dan. We learned a lot. We'll make sure we put up the websites that Dan was talking about, a lot about recovery and a lot about sobriety. That's the focus of Dan's life. But he also told you to go out and seek out some of those All Japan matches. Oh, I should tell everybody this. Speaking of Japan, I'm going to be going to Japan. I'm very excited about that.
Let's take the show on the road.
Now, we'll all go to Japan. What?
We'll all go to Japan. We'll do the show on the road.
You want to come with?
Big Jesse and the Rippers in Full House when they all went to Japan, the whole family.
I would love it. That'd be awesome. I'm going for New Japan on October 9th, I leave, and I'm calling the show on it's either the 11th or the 12th. No, it's the 11th. And then I fly home on the 12th. I'm very excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. The main event, AJ Styles and Okada for the IWGP heavyweight title.
If you can work in PlaySimation.com in Japanese, let's do it.
I know Genki desu ka. I learned that.
Okay.
That means, how are you? And then the answer is Genki desu.
Genki desu indeed.
Yes, Genki desu. All right, so that's it for this show. We'll be back in a few weeks' time, and then we'll figure it out from there. We got to line up Cornette as a guest. I'm putting myself on notice to go the extra mile to get Cornette on the horn and see if he can join us in a couple of weeks. So we'll do that. And what else? Okay, good job, McGinn. Thank you very much. JR, thank you as always for everything. And thanks to our guest. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. Make sure you check out the archives as well. And you can download each and every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show through iTunes, Stitcher, all those favorite downloadable content places that you go to anyway. And your website home, of course, placetobenation.com, where there is so much goodness. Make sure you're there and check it out. We'll see you in 2 weeks here on the Kevin Kelly Show, Place to Be Nation, and our website home, theplacetobenation.com.
Kinky boots indeed. Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had the strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cock.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's back!
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
No, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.